Mr. Jerry Murphy.
Got a complaint to the Muse. I don't make any complaints to the Muse, but this is the last one, definitely. Too many sane women are saluting me in the streets. Too many sane women are asking me out on dates. Too many sane women are ringing me at all hours to discuss their gloomy half-lives. Too many sane women are offering to release me from the sticky rituals of solitary sex and return to a modicum of commitment. Too many sane women are trying to convince me that true beauty like theirs is ultimately internal. I wish they would stop their playing hell with my aesthetic.
Thank you, Jerry. And as I believe as a compliment to that poem, our next reader is going to answer that poem. It's Mary O'Connell.
Ah, Jerry, you'll be the death of me. I thought you'd be reading a few more, but anyway, I would ask after this that you come back and do a few more, please. But anyway, this is... Anyway, I'll just do this one and we can go back again. This is called Repost to the Last. There was a time when maids were known for modesty and grief. On meeting you, they'd lower their gaze in any public place. But now we find the modern kind who look you in the eye and even hail you in the street whenever you go by. Such blatant lack of deference to men who crave respect from a pack of brazen hussies allowed to go unchecked just shows that things have sadly changed from when each knew her place. No gal should dare to interfere unless she's fair of face. Imagine if a well-known poet, Adonis in his prime, at his peak, had some plain Jane call out to him, could he forgive her cheek? If he had beauty, poise, and flair, he might return her smile. If not, let the poor thing beware this unrelenting bile. And that's it.
Oh, she's showing you up there, Jerry. She's showing you up there. You have to come back down. Sure. Well done, Mary. Put it in place. Next up to the microphone, can we please welcome Mr. Alan Coakley.
I've been very inspired by Buddhist philosophy in my life in the last few years, and I wanted to celebrate some of that with two poems. So I was thinking of doing poems based on different themes. And in Buddhism, there's ten paramis, or ten qualities of mind that are kind of aspired to by people practicing Buddhism. Things like loving kindness, patience, generosity. And that's basically what Buddhism is about for me. So I was thinking that I'd like to theme different poems around those different qualities. So the first thing I'm going to do tonight is renunciation. And I'm going to start with one by Patrick Kavanagh and then one by myself. So this is Advent by Patrick Kavanagh. We have tasted and tested too much, lover. Through a chink too wide there comes in no wonder. But here in this Advent darkened room, where the dry black bread and the sugarless tea of penance will charm back the luxury of a child's soul, we'll return to doom the knowledge we stole but could not use, and the newness that was in every stale thing when we looked at it as children, the spirit shocking wonder in a black dancing Ulster hill, or the prophetic astonishment in the tedious talking of an old fool, would await for us and bring you and me to the yard gates to watch the winds and the bog holes, cart tracks, old stables where time begins. Oh, after Christmas we'll have no need to go searching for the difference that sets an old phrase burning. We'll hear it in the whispered arguments of a churning, or in the streets where the village boys are lurching. And we'll hear it among simple, decent men too, who burrow dung in gardens under trees, wherever life pours ordinary plenty. Won't we be rich, my love and I, and please God we shall not ask for reason's payment, to fly of heartbreaking strangeness in dripping hedges, nor analyze God's breath in common statements. We have thrown into the dustbin the claimants' wages of pleasure, knowledge and the conscious hour, and Christ comes with a January flower. This poem, there was two ideas that were coming to me. One was the idea of renunciation, which I wanted to write a poem about. And the other thing that's been going around in my head is during the summer, I was walking in one of the poorer parts of Cork City, and this kid came up to me about 11, and I had an apple in my hand, and he came up and he asked me, "What's that in your hand?" Because he'd never seen an apple, which was like, it's funny but it's sad as well, you know. So those two ideas were coming to me, so I wrote this poem. And I suppose it's kind of in the sense of kind of an American style slam poem as well, so it feels both of you. So what is an apple? Now is the season of apples, now is the season of renunciation. Everywhere we put away our summer dreams for a year. Prepare for school or college, and if not, the rhythm is still there around us, as apples appear as if from nowhere in shops and lunchboxes in our middle class homes. My mind swings back to a bright summer day in the city of Roy, where an 11-year-old boy asked me, "What is that in your hand?" I was holding an apple and he hadn't seen one, and I thought, well, what is an apple? And I should have liked to say, an apple, son, is the most beautiful thing. It comes from the sun, it comes from a tree, it comes from God, made of the accidental stroke of a bee. It's nourished by water and rain from the soil, a manifestation of all that is good. And you are so great that you can kill it. And let it give its life to you, let it dissolve in your stomach and give you the movement to kick a ball and make you as beautiful and life-giving as the bee that accidentally spread life to the tree. But then I thought, I've gotten this wrong. Are we really the ones doing the eating? Usually we think that we are the eaters. But maybe it is life that eats us and life that enjoys us. Maybe we are the apple enjoying the bliss of being constantly eaten. And do we not also have our time of flowering before transforming into something not quite as superficially alluring, but rounder, juicier, and more useful? And is our youth really any more fruitful and beautiful than an apple's descent and merging with earth? And is not our deepest drive to give ourselves fully to life? And is this not the art of renunciation? To let the apple eat us, to let the woman lead us, to let the teacher teach us, to let the poet reach us. To let the goals meet us, to let the road lead us, to let the old man goad us, to let the old lady scold us, to let the young outgrow us, to let the nurse tend us, to let life mend us, to let life spend us, to let the womb fold us, to let life enfold us, to let life glow in us, to let life grow in us, to let life show in us, to let sadness snow in us, to let anger choke us, to let pain to hold us, to let happiness enfold us, to let others hold us, to forgive and forget those who mould us, to let love be us. To let an apple be loved, to let us be an apple, to let us be loved, to let it all go.
Thanks, Alan. Before we call our next guest, I think Jen wants to come up and say something. Would you like to say something? An announcement, I think. Do you want to do it live again?
Next week we're meeting at 7:30 to discuss poems of Carolyn Duffy. Here, 7:30. Anything you can find. Come, Carolyn Duffy. Join me and Anita. Okay.
Thanks, Jen. Okay, and our next poet for the evening is Patricia Walsh.
Hello.
This first
poem I wrote in 1975, called All Waxen Wings. The sadness and stillness of the boring streets of a boring city, falling rises never before. Keep the lamplights flickering and the gardens asleep, since no tractors repose from where we live. Now think alive, now expect big travelers, now watch anyone. The soul is dissolved and distant from a creator while we sleep, turning and tossing the same old melodies, same old songs, to stamp out the cliche I fear we have uncovered. Sadness doesn't kill my friend. It's a safer pleasure, I realize, as the dawn that opens the questions is next to know. If you're reading now what you know, the whole lot of me will understand. The melody of sadness will stop it crying. As we turn and go the way outside, I guess it's all the lasting comes from us. Separate people, separate angels, falling different states. This is from Watertower. 5 years expression in polarly different ways. Pretentious, sick and horrifying, even if it was only trying to fix the echelon gaze, I know truly, truly not myself. For myself, cries after day comes over, and reinforces my inaccurate efforts. I'm not part of this big club, though. But it was good while it lasted. A lot of times when I got what I wanted. 3 years back now. How? Pretentious, really. A secret. A simple answer. But whichever needs to get along. A watershed, of course. A water tower of self-illumination. I have no presence of myself, nor ever of others, so if I were to go away like Wishwell, then nobody knows I know them. But I'd remain up in some locked mole hole, having to look down alone, up alone, having to look down alone, from where the old water tower was, and how well the town had grown since I left, and somehow a lot more filthy. But today my dog trickles down the slope for one last time, before the others is done. But what happens then? It provokes for the crime to see and hear the strong ones who made fresh, successful cut down to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. And our next guest on the list tonight is Mr. Gene Barrett. Journey that I took my father when I drove him to the consultant the day he got that news he didn't want to hear. It's called Myopic Moments. When I picked you up that day, it was no different to any bad news day or any good news day. Speed phones were exercising the birth of texting. That was new. As was the news we would inherit in a few hours and dilute to taste. You were my boy now, and I tied your oversized coat and tucked your hat on your new small head. I avoided eyeing the space which was new between your neck and collar. There was a lifetime's history living in there these last few months. Mr. O'Sullivan hurried out of sight around the top corner. The new kids at the end of the park crisscrossed on feet and cycled the roads and paths. You puffed on your inhaler and barely negotiated the 8 paces to my car. Earlier, I had strategically reversed it into our driveway for the first time in 17 years. You fell into the passenger seat like a punch drunk and uselessly puffed again. I wanted to cry, and I wondered if there were times when I was your boy that you wanted to cry. It was a journey of avoidance for the two of us, as we swapped volumes of cliches and placebo for naught. It was to be our last. The fear of death was in your tired and fighting blue eyes. There were two reasons now why you couldn't speak. The clinic steps ushered in a few more puffs, as did the 16 riders. I thought of 16 more reasons why you should evict this new intruder. Behind the curtain,
You think life's honor in your bed for an extension. 6 weeks he gave you. 6 months after infusing your resilience. Through the glass partition, I saw you plop into the bailiff's plant. Your two empty and unfacilitating lungs begging retirement. I wanted to scoop you up and keep you forever, but you asked me to leave you there. The resilience, I remembered. You were always a final whistle man, steadfast and determined, brave and heroic as ever, and searching for that chintz punch, that tackle to make. All robbed, no. You never had time for cowards like me, not until today, when you let a hero drive you home. Thanks. This is what I wrote yesterday, called Bone Lot. I picked up two guys from Belarus, from one of the Chernobyl charities, and had to drive them to a location here in Ireland. Both of them in wheelchairs, they got cerebral palsy. And when I got home last night, I wrote this, it's called Bone Lot. It's for Pasha, one of the guys. No one has seen the walls that hover around you, shields that only land occasionally in polluted fields of adulthood, burdened by deaf ears and confused and troubled at your country's barriers. Your birth year blew you a second violation, nuclear, a shock to torture your family, now summoned to a careless free life. Is there a poet of gratitude rocking in your twisted frame, burying volumes of antiquity, those beasts that bite you after binding? Is there an Olympian caged within, breaking ribbon after ribbon, a podium tenant writing heroic cantatas, a screamer without an audience? Are your trips as grey as a funeral procession, or as pleasing as a lap of honour? Thanks. Last one is kind of an unusual one, so probably a love poem, if you wrote it. I call it Perfect. This is PURRFECT. A cadre of night punishers slipped in again and dipped their toes in my sleep, sending ripples of restlessness to torment me. Before the rivets of peacefulness have driven home, they have landed, a cortege of worries. I wake and canter another sleepless hour. With eyes closed, I am a scaffolder, a carpenter, a tiler, busy building my dream home. I wire and plumb and sweep and drill. Eyes open, I lean forward with the ease of a master thief and kiss your sleeping shoulder with the caress of a pint pudding publican. I knit my gaze to your sleeping fur and doff my cap to the foolish notion that introduced me to this hour. Thanks.
Thank you, Gene. Our next poet on the list for the evening is Anita Day.
Carving, a shape in the sky behind, greenery of song, in tune for exhausted heads the day after a night when drink took over, leave the gig for people after work to lose their ears, include their eyes when the sun's dazzling musician's image shelter from hardship, variety of leaf shapes, last posts of plants look up to the sky, least tiny within the master's concert, skilted leap on offered pedestrians in the local park, choosing one's own actors in one's own local park, one's own football pitch, one's particular walk in the park.
Thank you.
hurt. You showed me how to feel hurt, just a little at first, so it wouldn't be too much to bear. I have my books for comfort. You looked disgusted at my consumption of bananas on the South Mall, the legal area of the city. I have my books at home for comfort. It was around noon. You had your tea in a paper cup, did it stylishly, whereas I could not afford to buy a cup even in a paper cup. I have my books, they have somewhere to go, a comfort, while I write about her. We then keep her in bed. She cannot afford to heat her apartment as much as she would like. She has to keep the bed to stay warm. Reading holds her in bed, writing, meditation, listening to the radio, to CD, having breakfast. Not between the sheets, it's just sleep. All can be done on the bed with a clothing top, comfortably, wrapped up from cold, protected.
Thanks, Anita. There are a lot of Casey's in the building tonight, so I'm going to call one of them up to say a poem or a short story. Miriam Casey. Thank you.
A beautiful thing. It was a cold, without day. Frances felt the raindrops. She had not brought an umbrella. She began to cry because she didn't want to get wet. Frances started to run. Suddenly she heard a loud noise in the undergrowth. She looked to see what it could be. She jumped as she felt something brush against her leg. It was the biggest cat that she'd ever seen. Instinctively, Frances looked in her bag for the milk that she had not drunk. She offered it to the cat, who lapped it up and once more disappeared into the undergrowth. The moment had passed. The rain began to fall heavily. There was no place for Frances to find shelter. She was very wet when she reached her home. She was scolded for being so careless. Frances was sent to bed early. She cried herself to sleep. Now this cat was no ordinary cat. It knew lots of important people and was well related to the Pickler Company, fairies. It told them about the rain, the milk and Frances. The fairies liked the sound of Frances and decided to help her. A care fairy was sent to keep an eye on her. He noticed that she had a cut. It is the kind of cough that only fairies could see. The fairy was wise and very ancient. He knew things that were not known to many. His advice sounded a bit like this. Frances needs to smell roses, but she feels only thorns. With magic and lore, the fairies mixed a lot of rose potions together, and they placed the healing fairy balm on the cough. Now she will smell roses from her way, instead of thorns from herself, but the forecast. As they flew off into the fairy night. Thank you.
Thank you, Maria. And next up, we haven't been around in a while. Hey, where are you going?
It's
you. Huh? It's the pressure, it's the crowd. It's grown since Erin's been here, obviously. Maybe we can spot you and Erin around, to be honest. Could we please welcome Mr. John Ryan?
Okay, this is a new piece I've been working on. It's not finished at all, but I'll give it an airing anyway. It still doesn't have a title either, but it's dedicated to anyone who's ever been in a relationship, good or bad. Through windows, a snapshot of preparation and activity. Might be the incentive to go out anywhere. Yet not now, observing. Instead, living in my head time. Repeating patterns lead to a malady. Scatterings of what I could say, a nominal strategy, or could remain in for the night maybe. Cantankerous and pottering about in the heart, rewinding to its start, what might have been. That old torturous, self-beating, tearing at oneself, that filling of some need. The leash of life hangs, perhaps, to be broken. Destiny sometimes uncoiled like a trap by a few words spoken in haste. As the day sometimes chases over my head, my body in stasis, memories, conjured reality, replaces this moment. In seconds become lifetimes. Legends now I make of my human interaction, in episodes on a slide. I abide in my living version of love and togetherness and separation. In the peril of excuses I hide. The liar's guide speak by my side. To admit wrong, well, I would have died. Thank you.
Thanks, John. And now to please welcome Erin Lewis.
First of all, with a song, and then I'll read some poems.
Oh, bonny Portmore, I'm sorry to see such a woeful destruction of your ornament tree. For it stood on your shelf for many a long day, till the lambert from Antrim came to float it away. Oh, bonnie Portmore, you shine where you stand, and the more I think on you, the more I think long. If I had you now as I had once before, all the landlords in England would not purchase Portmore. All the birds in the forest, they bitterly weep, saying, when shall we shelter, and where will we sleep? For the oak and the ash tree are all cut down, and the walls of bonny Portmore are rolled down to the ground. Oh, bonny Portmore, you shine where you stand, and the more I think on you, the more I think long. If I had you now as I had once before, all the landlords in England would not purchase Portmore.
I feel really privileged to live in Ireland. My grandma used to bring us over here since I was a kid. I used to come over, I came on when I was 12, I came again when I was 13. And I didn't come again till I was 21, 3 years ago. And it has been a dream for me since I was a kid. Every time I got off that plane from Dublin to Newcastle, it was just a sense of a piece of me had been left behind in Ireland. I've always been drawn here. I've always felt more at home here than I do in England. So, and I think there's a magic in Ireland that there isn't other places in the world. Billy Connolly says that there's more poets and writers in Ireland per square mile than there is anywhere else in the world. So there's a beauty and there's a special sense and love and all of that. And I've really felt that Ireland helped me to become myself more, and I think so. Thank you, Ireland, before I tell you the poems. But yeah, I haven't been writing many poems, but I've been writing a lot of. I do a thing in the morning where I write 3 pages of stream consciousness. I've been doing that now for eight weeks solid. I've consistently been doing that, so I haven't written any poems. But today I set myself a bit of time aside and I wrote a couple of poems. So here we go. A poem about now. The moment has arisen, together, fresh, free, untouched, untarnished, deliberate, a fresh breeze in winter, or a warm thunder under, or a warm stone underfoot. I allow these moments to caress my fortune. I am blessed, allowed to be here now. The moment commands unblinding expression. I am found. A thought flashes, an eye blink, taking me from now. I am observant to the unfolding forms that play in sync. Yeah, I've really felt a bit of a nip in the air. I don't know if I'm the only one, but it's kind of getting colder, so... Yeah, it's a bit colder than the throat. I wrote a poem today called Winter Is Coming, and I just finished in the book tonight, so here we go. The fresh chill on my nose, red cheeks, my pom-pom hat. Insulated toes engulfed in wool. Crunch of the snow vibrating beneath. Steamy conversation. Drips, drops from silver spiked under a broken roof. Patterns of crisscrossing prints, children, prams, dogs, cats, big feet, wellingtons, and boots make the pattern. Sitting round a warm cracking fire, sipping hot liquid slowly. Yeah, that's it.
Thanks, Aaron. Next up on the list, could we welcome Mr. Seamus Harrington.
Thanks, Paul. Two poems on the same theme. Surrounded by history here. First one is called The Silly. April 18th, 1910. Out of New York, deep laden, she grounded, close to Briar Island. Cash registers, 400 barrels of oysters, sewing machines, sacks of flour, 20,000. 234, CQ, we may need help, SOS, head of cattle, cases of tooth powder, typewriters, 67 passengers, CQ, help, SOS, 100 crew, one nervous pony, standby, lizard station, glucose and ingots of copper. A creek dip of oars, pilot gig on the scene, everyone saved. Grim Reaper's hand stayed, that foggy Monday, so close to Land's End. 3 weeks of jetsam, recovered, refloated, repaired to Southampton. Repaired and made shipshape. 7 years of good luck, then out by the fastness. A dreaded tin fish sends her to the bottom. Lord rest 43 souls on SS Minnehaha. The sailor. He hit the deck one day last week. His dancing eyes show he got sunk. His weathered frame is tough as cheek. his grapnel claw now rakes his bunk. His quest to find an after cleat, his boat hooks like a walking cane. He spots the bedpost winch complete. He bends the line and takes the strain. He reads her well, notes every sign. He spins the wheel to meet a squall. He grabs his fork and twists a chine. He licks the point of this spread all. He hauls the sheets and pans the sails. He rants the names of countless yachts. He feels his way along the rail. He can't recall these antique knots. He is new to this deep Arctic fjord. His Sunday charts lie still unread. He heaves his quilt raft overboard. He ports the helm, then full ahead. He claims his pipe is clinker built. He tamps a fill from an oakum hank. He leans outboard to meet the tilt. He'll brook no lip from a junior rank. He clamps his toes on a transom slat. His lightweight line is close at hand. He swings the foam beyond the mat. He plumbs the depths of shifting sand. He knows the bell to change the watch. He calls his boatswain's name aloud. He drains a shot of double scotch. He now ascends that weather shroud. He spies at last those leading lights. He catches the tide at break of day. He'll first kit out in his dress white. He'll show these bums a top display. He pounds a boot on cockpit sole. He sees lookouts upon the bow. He's reached the end of this patrol. He hails, let go the anchor now. He pulls the halyard nice and taut. His nightgown cloak is split in two. He looks for once a tad distraught. He'll soon replace that scurvy crew. He squints again to check the glass. His flagging wits just draw a blank. He feels deep down it's come to pass. He may be next to walk the plank. Thank you.
Thank you, Seamus. And next up, could we have Eileen Lorden. Eileen?
The cottage. I stand at my cottage door to see that chickens and ducks around the yard on a summer's day. In winter, when the days are getting short and the wind shaking the trees, I walk around the cottage on a winter evening and the moon shining and the stars. I look up and count them. And then at nightfall when the fire is lighting inside the cottage, the kitchen is nicely warmed up, cozy. Neighbors would come in and chat. Then the chitters go on the fire for a cup of tea. Then when the tea is over, neighbors would chat about everything that happened. At bedtime, we would say the rosary and go to bed.
Is it all right?
Excellent. Next up to the microphone, could we please welcome Mr. Edward O'Dwyer.
Thank you.
Okay, this poem is about somebody who died in 1865. No, sorry, he was born in 1865 and died in 1885. It's called Matthew Fitzgerald. Even though he was dead, my mother adopted him 30 years ago as her second child, because he seemed to have no one else. He was still just a child. With hedge clippers, flowers she had bought, she cleared the look of abandonment from the black iron cross and the headstone. On it, said a prayer soft as a goodnight kiss. Just last night, she asked me to visit his grave and write a poem for him. So I went this afternoon, and though she hadn't been there in a year, the grass over him was cut neat and covered with daisies and dandelions, even a first buttercup. No longer the wilderness she had described. He was like a boy now that had suddenly grown up. Independent, could take care of himself, could go through death alone at last. It was time for our mother to let go. On a lighter note, this one. It's a poem about an ex-girlfriend of mine, and because I love horror movies so much, she said she told me that she liked horror movies too, just so I wouldn't feel guilty as she sat through them. She actually hated them, but she told me she liked them, which was really sweet. This is called, Watching the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, November 18th, 2003. Yes, this is your couch and your living room. This, the popcorn I made. That's my hand on your other shoulder. No killers. The sound of wind, rain, knocks, rattles of the window means no more than it's windy, raining. Really, I'm okay. I know it's only a movie, your reply to my question, after he thrust her shrieking onto the meat hook, shuffling your body more into mine. Only a movie, you said, as your heartbeat hit like a sledge on my body. An empathy of blood your logic couldn't convince. Thump by thump, one by one, it knocked off your words. And a number of people have hit on this theme tonight, so I'll read this poem. I've noticed the change in the weather too. So crossing the bridge, I nearly caught my death. This poem called Autumn. The summer and winter eyeing each other up violently. Autumn's a tense time, an uncertain time. Leaves on trees dwindling. Remaining birds singing only half-hearted songs. The grey-blue grapple of daytime sky. Just a blink to tip the scale. Colder now suddenly. Congested grumbles in the clouds. Rain starting to flop. It's happened as we knew. But in November, the odd wasp or butterfly comes indoors, reminders the honey and nectar of summer's veins has not frozen deathly solid. Thank you. Thank you, Rick. Next up to the microphone, could we please welcome Mr. George Harding.
Here in the whole town, better to write books and take it, what's it called, passive memory. I can't think of the phrase, but you know, hear about so called thoughts. Getting it? This is called a blank screen. At least with the blank page you have control, you could ignore it, crumble it up, or strangle it. But this puke and scream, it breathes, makes other weird noises, and watches you by them. It is difficult to even belch. It may hear you. You nearly apologize, even without defacing it with batter. And it never blinks. It just stares you to death. What is it that you want? Coughing at me like that, like a 6-9-8. Yeah, right. But what would happen if I said a thief? With you on top of my head.
Thank you, George. And next up we have, for the first time, Chris Jones.
Native English speaker, I'm from Austria, but I have actually just something short. Today is the open mic night, so first when I came in, he asked me if I want to do something. I said, I don't know, but then after a while I saw you, and I got a little but I have just really something short, but in the beginning I just wanted to see if you just a thought from me about home. Like when I say where is home, look, when I think now about where is home, I just go around the corner because I just live over there. So for me, it's at the moment home over there. But if I think about home, it's also home in Austria, in Salzburg. And that's my home as well, and I just want to share this thought with you. I think home is there where your heart is at the moment where you are. So when I go in the pub and I say I go home, I go over there and not back to Austria, which is too far. And well, I have a little rhyme actually here in my phone because I had what once a friend, and she was thinking about other friends and stuff, and she couldn't make her mind up what to do. And I just sent her a little text message, and it's really short, so I'm just going to read it for you. Sometimes time change your mind, sometimes people change your mind, or sometimes just a raindrop hits your head and everything changes.
And before that happens, Owen just walked in the door and his heels are coming up to say a song, sing a song to you. Hey, Owen. Do you need a rest break first, Owen, are you? Okay, excellent. Cheers, Owen. Otherwise, we'll see you after the break.
Acoustics in here. I'll take away the mic and I'll sing acoustically because I don't. And I'm going to leave for me guitar.
Is
there
any
next guy? No, totally acoustic. Totally acoustic.
So, does it come from another open mic? And I hope you enjoy whatever song come out for you to hear tonight.
Yeah.
Are you a verse to love song?
No.
Very loving crowd.
What's that?
Very loving crowd.
I feel the love.
Thank you.
one more, yeah? This one has no title, yeah? You don't know about the fight, but I'm not today. Oh, yeah, I'm not today. I look up a fight.
Thank you.